We're doing in Yaakov on Tractate Shabbos, and last week we left off with a very interesting story. There was a man who was married to a woman who had no hands. She had her hands cut off. And his whole life he didn't know that she was missing her arms. That's where we left off. Remember, there was this pious person who was married to a woman who was a gidemet. She was missing her arm. Her arm was cut off. Veloi kirba. So it could be that she was only missing one arm. I can tell you I had a chavrusa, and we were learning all year. And it was after Pesach. And I was sitting next to him. And suddenly I looked down. And I see on his lap is a prosthetic arm. And I look up the arm. He's reading the Mishnah. And I'm stunned to silence. I see a prosthetic arm. And I look up the arm. And I see him. And I look back down. And I see that's a prosthetic. And I've been learning with him all year. Not only have I been learning with him all year, our study session was after lunch. So I ate lunch a little earlier than him. I would come before the study session, pull out all the books off the shelf. When we finished learning, I'd leave him them for him to put back. I did my end. He should do his end. Wow. Could you imagine what it's like going to a stacked shelf with one hand and getting the book into the shelf? But I didn't know it. The whole year I'm learning with him Chavrusa. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, did he have an accident over Pesach? It can't be that he had an accident and he got a prosthetic and he's back to yeshiva and everything's okay. And I'm trying to think. And I came to the unbelievable conclusion that I've been learning with someone for half a year and I didn't notice he had a prosthetic. I had a prosthetic hand. So that can happen. When a person is very talented and very good at compensating, I'm telling you factually, till today, we're good friends. We learned Chavrusa for years afterwards. But the first half a year, we were Chavrusa. I didn't know it. And then when he started dating, so I called his roommates and I asked them if they can give me a description of how they would describe him. And I noticed with one of the roommates, he didn't mention the prosthetic arm and it became evident he didn't know. He also didn't notice. So this person is very talented. He types quicker than most people do with two hands. He plays the piano better than most people could with two hands. He knows how to fix things in electronics with one hand. So he's learned to compensate. He's very talented. By the way, a point in parenting, I once spoke to his mother, and she said she had to hold her breath and treat him like every other kid. And that's how he developed this way. He wanted to ride a bike. She let him ride a bike. And she'd have to silently cry every time he fell and not come out and pity him, but let him fight for himself and figure out how to do it with one hand. And he did. And that's very hard as a parent. You want to come and hold the kid and support the kid. And she said, no, that's how he stumbled and he fell until... Yeah. Yeah. So he didn't get preferential treatment. So you could understand the story that way. But I want to tell you a story. Let's first read the final two lines. Rav Yosef says, look at how modest the woman was. Her husband didn't even know she was missing an arm. And Rav Chia says, of course she tried to cover it up. That's the way women are. Of course she wanted to be tzinua. She didn't want to point out she was missing something. But look at how modest he was. That he was married to her his whole life and he never knew she was missing an arm. Why, that's modesty.
Why does that make you modest?
Because if the essence of intimacy is connecting to the human being, then like Avraham Avinu, who's married to his wife for the better part of a century, and he never notices she's beautiful. Because that has nothing to do with it. There's a spiritual connection between the two of them. It's hard for us to fathom such a thing, but it exists. There is such a thing as connecting to a human being as a spiritual connection. And not just a plutonic relationship, because you see, they attempted to have kids. They attempted many times, it's evident from Chazal. It's not that they'd be intimate once in a few years and everything else was plutonic. No, Abraham and Sarah had marital relations the way a couple are supposed to, but it was a totally different thing. So there's a very interesting lesson. Rabbi Shapiro, as I found with many big people in Torah, would very often say jokes. You think that when a person's big in Torah, so they're always serious, and I found it to be the exact opposite. The people who are big in Torah very often have a good sense of humor, and they can convey and they can educate through humor. So Rabbi Shapiro once said to me the following story. He said there was a big pious man married to a woman who was a hunchback. So his wife was always bent over, and he was married to her for years. And he never noticed it, because he was a big tzaddik. And then one day, they were getting ready for the wedding of one of their kids, and he notices his wife all bent over like this, and her back is a hump. And he says, "Honey, what do you have with your back?" So they've been married 35 years, and he suddenly says, "What do you have with your back?" So she was a sharp woman. She looked at him and said, "What do you know? This is the way all women are. This is how God created women. You know women are different than men. This is how women are." So he said, "Oh." She understood. If I'm married to him 35 years and he never noticed, so then he also doesn't know what other women look like, right? If he didn't know what I look like, so he didn't know what they look like. So that's okay. So that's a very important lesson. You think of it as humor, but if you'll think about it a little bit more deeply, you'll see there's a lot to that story. Coming back to the Gemara. So this man is married to a woman, and the Gemara says, look at how modest he is. He doesn't know it. He doesn't know she's missing an arm. And again, if we'll be careful in Rashi, Rashi says her hand was cut off, not both hands. And I guess she knew how to compensate. Okay, we're moving on in the Gemara. Harchilim yotzot kivulot. When you let your animals go out on Shabbos, so we're concerned that if the animal has... First of all, the animal has to rest on Shabbos, right? The animal isn't allowed to do work on Shabbos. So your animal cannot be carrying packs on Shabbos. Secondly, we're concerned sometimes where you have no Erev. So sometimes you're in a place where you have no Erev. You're in Brooklyn, you go out. I get this question almost every year. People go camping, hiking, they go to a deserted island. People sometimes go on vacation to all kinds of places. So you're in a place where there's no Erev. You're in a place where there's no real Jewish community, or the community cannot erect an Erev, like in Manhattan. So then you're not allowed to carry things on Shabbos. You're not allowed to walk into the public domain with gum in your mouth. You're not allowed to, you're allowed to wear the clothing you're wearing, but you're not allowed to carry a tissue in your pocket. You're not allowed to carry anything in your pockets, in your mouth, on your shoulder. You're not allowed to carry on Shabbos in public domain. In the house, you could. In a shul, you could. In a private domain, in a home, you could. So we had over here in Jerusalem, in the latest snowstorm, the Erev went down. So it was prohibited to carry. So one person asked, can he put plastic bags over his shoes to go to shul? Or is that considered he's carrying the plastic bags because it's not a real garment, right? So our Mishnah discusses how you could let your animal go out. We have a few concerns. Number one, the animal cannot carry unnecessary things. Number two, we're concerned that the animal shouldn't drop stuff and you'll go get it. So I'm not sure if you're allowed to walk with Crocs in a place where you don't have an Erev. Because I think it happens that Crocs fall off your feet when you're running around. And then a person might come to carrying them. You pick it up, you carry it. So I'm not sure.
Can you just slip it back on your foot?
Theoretically, you could. The question is if you will. Or you'll carry it to the side and put it on your foot. There will be circumstances where you do this. There will be circumstances where you do that. Later on, we'll see the Mishnah says, a person who, let's say, you guys will encounter this Bizlat Hashem, you wake up one morning and you find only one shoe. When you have little kids, you have a bunch of helpers, and they deal with your shoes. So you're rushing to shul, and you have one shoe. Now go deal. Okay? So the Mishnah says you cannot go out with only one shoe. I blessed all of you. You should merit to have this. It happens. That's what it should be. It's a normal house. Your kids like playing with your shoes. So that's the way it should be. The Mishnah says... The Mishnah says if you go with one shoe, we're scared people will start laughing at you and you'll be embarrassed, and then you'll take off that shoe. You'll end up carrying it. You'll put it in your pocket or behind your back or something, right? If everyone goes like that, right, so everyone's pointing at you, you're going to take it off. Like you said, right? You're better off with no shoes than with one shoe. So that's why the Mishnah says, don't go out with one shoe. What happens if you have a cast on your foot? Then everyone knows why you're not going on. So that's okay. We'll get to that. So now our Mishnah is discussing if you have sheep. So sheep can go out kivulot, the Mishnah says. What is kivulot? Asked the Gemara. Sometimes you want the sheep to develop. You don't want them to get pregnant. So kivulot means tied down. What does it mean? What would they tie down? They would tie down the sheep's tail downward so that the male couldn't mount the female sheep. The tail would stay down and cover up her private parts. So that the people would do that. There were different times when you wanted it to mate and you didn't want it to mate. When you didn't want it to mate, so you tie down the tail. So that's called kivulot. The Gemara says, how do you know that the word kavul means not producing fruits? So it says that there was a land that was not productive that was given the nickname the land of kivul. So you see, kavul means non-productive. Okay, I'll read that in the Gemara. Halchilim, the sheep, right? Rachel means sheep, yeah? Yotzeot kivulot, they go out kivulot. My kivulot, asks the Gemara, shemechavlim al yashlem lemata, they tie their tail downward. Kedei, so that, shelo yalu azcharim al ankevot, so the males won't mount the females. Me'ein mashma, where do we see an indication, dehai kavul, that the word kavul, lishna is lashon, is a term of delo avid, that does not produce peiri, who? Peiri is fruits. Dichtiv, because the verse says, Solomon wanted to give a gift, so he gave Hiram a gift, and then Hiram, the king who was helping him build the temple, goes and looks at the cities he gave him, and he comes back to Solomon, and he's not pleased. He says to Solomon, what are these cities you gave me, brother? He gave him a nickname, Land of Kvul. So he meant, you sold me a city that's filled with wealthy people. They're all going to find loopholes in paying taxes. This won't be a productive city. I'm not getting anything from this city. So that's why he called it Kvul. My Eretz Kvul. What does it mean, Kvul? The Gemara answers, Amavuna shayu bavnei adam shem chubalim bekesef uvzahav. There were people who were covered with gold and silver. Amale Rava yachi anu dichtiv lo yeshu beinav mipnei shem chubalim kesef uvzahav lo yeshu beinav. Rava says, then what was his problem? If they don't have money, if they have so much money. He said, yeah, they're so wealthy and spoiled, they're never going to show up to work, they're never going to do the stuff Hiram needs them for. That's why Hiram said, I don't need citizens like this, all they have is money, they don't know how to work, they're not going to be productive citizens. So that's why he was upset. King Solomon figured, I'm giving you people who are wealthy, then you could use them, they got the brains. Hiram says, I'm a lumberjack, I know how to cut wood, I need people who know how to cut wood, what'd you give me this city filled with professors? It doesn't help me. Okay, we're out of time. We'll pick up here, Bezat Shem, next week.